Thank you for downloading the East Haven Podcast. For more information about our church, please visit easthavenchurch.org. Now, please join Pastor Kevin Reiser as he brings us this week's message.
When we get done today, I may be your best friend, or you may be so mad you can't see straight. Either way, I'm okay with that. I'll start out this morning by letting you in on some research that's been done. And we've got quite a bit of time to gather our information, because a lot of the studies started back in the 60s, which was really kind of a rebellious age for people in our country and in our culture. But since the 1960s, research has done a lot of study on spoiled children and undisciplined children, more to the point. And what they have discovered is that undisciplined children... One study said undisciplined children are the biggest threats we face as a civilized society. Ed Young Jr. wrote a book entitled Children's CEOs, and it was about how we have lived in a culture that basically lets our children run the household. He talked about a lot of these devastating things, but a lot of the research that's coming back on children that grew up without discipline is not positive stuff. It's just not. Studies tell us that children that grew up in homes where there was little or no discipline or inappropriate or lack of discipline had earlier brushes with the law. They were younger and younger as brushes with the law occurred. They are more likely to take drugs as teens. They are more likely to be sexually active. They will have more sex partners throughout their lifetime. They are more prone to lie. They have a higher divorce rate. A study out of the University of Oregon even suggests that they have a higher obesity rate than other children who are disciplined appropriately. They have shorter lifespans. The only good thing about undisciplined children is that one study suggests they have higher pay. But in that same study, it says while they have higher pay, they have shorter careers. And the hypothesis of the study is because they don't have respect for authority, they're always the squeaky wheel, and the squeaky wheel always gets the grease, and so they're able to just, you know, to get them to shut up and stop being a pain in the workforce's backside, they'll go ahead and give them pay raises. But by and large, children that grow up in undisciplined structures don't fare well in society. They don't have respect for authority. They don't have respect for adults. They don't have respect for themselves. The Bible speaks to this subject pretty clearly. But keeping with the theme of the day, one of the things the Bible does not say in addressing the situation is, well, you know, if we just spare the rod, because we've spared the rod, we've spoiled the child. You know, the Bible teaches that. Well, not really. The Bible doesn't teach that. I think it's a reasonable concept, particularly if you look at Proverbs chapter 13. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 24 says, the parent who spares the rod hates their child. The parent who spares the rod hates their child, but the parent who loves their children are careful to discipline them. That passage talks about the virtue of using a rod of discipline on your child. But it doesn't say, well, if you spare the rod, the child is spoiled. Not necessarily, because discipline is not always about getting a spanking. If you brought your text, or if you can log into your app with the website this morning, the Wi-Fi this morning, look at Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12 tells us that there are a lot of aspects to discipline, and spanking or whipping or disciplining them in the way that we think of discipline is not always a part of it. Hebrews chapter 12, beginning in verse 5, the writer of Hebrews says, have you forgotten the encouraging words God spoke to you as His children? He said, my child, don't make light of the Lord's discipline, and do not give up when the Lord corrects you. For the Lord disciplines those He loves, and He punishes each one He accepts as His children. The writer of Hebrews says that the Lord disciplines us, and He uses encouraging words. You see, here's the problem that we have with our concept of discipline. We think our concept of discipline is some type of physical punishment. It is a swat on the backside. It is a taking away of the cell phone. It is a sticking in time out. We think that bringing some kind of inconvenience or some kind of suffering into a child's life is discipline. Hebrews says that discipline that comes from the Lord is oftentimes in the form of encouragement. It is just a way to prod us on. It is a coaching aspect of who our Father is. Verse 7, he says, as you endure this divine discipline, remember that God is treating you as His own children. And whoever heard of a child who is never disciplined by his father? It's something that's to be endured. right? Here's the problem with thinking that discipline is a one-time swat on the backside or a three-minute timeout. There's no enduring there, right? I can sit still in the corner for 3 minutes and then go back to being a brat. When I was growing up, I would prefer to get pops from my father because once the pops were over, the punishment was over. No, it's something that we endure. That speaks of a long process. That speaks of a teaching, a training, a correcting, a prodding, a guiding type process. Discipline is not a bad thing. It's a learning thing. It's a lifelong thing. It's being a disciple, where we get the word discipline from. A disciple is someone who is learning. It doesn't have to be terrible. Now, to kind of keep with the theme of things that aren't in the Bible, and that is sparing the rod, spoiling the child, there are times when the rod is necessary. There are times when spanking is appropriate. So let's look at why that is a reasonable parenting technique today. Because Proverbs 13 is pretty darn clear. Proverbs 13 says, "The parent who spares the rod hates their child. But parents who love their children are careful to discipline them." And so in this case, the rod and discipline go hand in hand. There are times when it's appropriate. There are several reasons. One of the biggest reasons this is appropriate is because godly parental discipline roots out rebellion. Godly parental discipline roots out rebellion. We have a problem that Jeremiah discusses in Jeremiah chapter 17. In Jeremiah chapter 17, the prophet says, "The heart is deceitful above all things and is desperately sick." Some translations say it is desperately wicked. Who can understand it? Verse 10, the Lord speaks up and says, "I, the Lord, search the heart and test the mind to give every person according to their ways and according to the fruits of their deeds." The Lord says, "I expect you to have fruitful ways and I expect you to have a life filled with good deeds. I expect you to be a decent human being." We're going to talk about that more in a minute in Matthew chapter 7. But there's an expectation that we have and live a good kind of life. Here's the problem, and Jeremiah points out. The heart is desperately wicked. So I don't care how young your child is. I don't care how cute your child is. I don't care how adorable you think your child is. The Bible says your child is desperately wicked. Moms, I know that shocks you, but it's true. What's even worse is that not only is the child desperately wicked, but so are the parents that are trying to raise the child. So we have a problem. We're already desperately wicked. You know what it's like. You do not have to teach a child to be bad, right? Children know how to be bad. I got really lucky in the marriage department. Everybody thinks that Debbie is just this saintly person. Even when we speak her name, choirs sing and clouds part and things like that. But when Debbie was two, Debbie's dad said, "Debbie, pick your blocks up." And she, in defiance, looked at him and said, "No. Debbie, pick your blocks up. No." So out comes the rod of discipline. "Debbie, pick your blocks up." "No." So we're going to try the rod of discipline again. "Debbie, pick your blocks up." "No." Fast forward to 2015, those blocks are still in Debbie's room. They still have not been picked up. Nobody taught her to just defy her father in such a terrible way. She learned that because she's desperately wicked. She's gotten better since she found Jesus, by the way. It just happened. Every one of us is that way, and we don't have to be taught to be desperately wicked. We're desperately wicked. And so the Bible tells us that because we have this problem, discipline must be required. Proverbs chapter 22 says, "Folly is bound up in the heart of the child, but the rod of discipline drives it far from them." Folly is bound up in the heart of the child, but discipline drives it from them. When I was a little kid, I had a fascination with fire. Who am I kidding? I still have a fascination with fire. Debbie came home one day, and she's like, "What's this?" I'm like, "It's a Zippo lighter." She's like, "Why do you have a Zippo lighter?" "It has a lifetime guarantee." "Why do you have a Zippo lighter?" "Listen, click, 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 click." "Kevin, why do you have a Zippo lighter?" "I love fire." What can I tell you? I had a moment of insanity. And it goes back to when I was a kid. We had a tent set up in the backyard. Cousins were in from Arizona. We were all hanging out in the backyard. And we came in and everybody kind of had this sheepish grin on their face. And of course, the parents always know when the children have done something they weren't supposed to do. We were in the tent and we were playing with lighters. And in the tent. If you know anything about canvas tents, you know that's probably not a good idea, especially the old-timey ones that were soaked in creosote. And so we came back in, and we all had this sheepish grin on our face, and the ladies, the moms were like, "What are y'all doing out there?" Moms know, right? My cousin Chris, a big punk, said, "We weren't doing nothing. We were just making fires in the tent." Well, you know what fires in a creosote canvas tent are going to do to the creosote canvas tent. We managed to just burn holes in the floor of the tent. I was a child being foolish, living in my folly. I knew I wasn't supposed to be there. My dad had told us about fire and about canvas tents, but it was the only way we could play with the fire and not be seen. And so we played with the fire in the tent out of the eyeballs of the parents. Children are foolish like that. And I wasn't doing it just to have fun. I was deceitful with it. I knew that I wasn't supposed to be doing that. But I made a choice to do it anyway. Folly is bound up in a heart of child. But the rod of discipline drives it far from him. I got swatted for that. I got swatted good for that. To this day, I don't bring my Zippo lighter into my tent. I learned my lesson. It roots out the rebellion. It helps us to know the difference between that which is right and that which is wrong, not only in an earthly sense of the household rules, but also in a godly sense of this is the way God has designed your life, and you need to stay on that course. You need to stick to that. Godly discipline helps root out that natural bent towards a wicked heart and a rebellious nature. But godly parental discipline also guides us towards salvation. And this is perhaps the most important key here, is that it guides us towards salvation. Look, if the heart's desperately wicked, we don't have a choice. We don't have a shot, right? But at some point, you and I as children have to be confronted with the fact that we have a wicked heart, and that heart is in desperate need of a Savior, and that Savior's name is Jesus Christ. Proverbs 23 gives great instruction to the parents. He says, "Don't fail to discipline your children." Moms, you're not going to like this, particularly if one of those helicopter parents who dotes over their children all the time and thinks they can do no wrong. But he says, look it up, Proverbs 23, 13, and 14. Don't fail to discipline your children. You ready? They won't die if you spank them. New Living Translation. I swear it's in there. Physical discipline may well save them from death. They're not going to die. Matter of fact, God designed the body to take a pop now and then. That's why he gave you extra padding in the popping place. It's not going to kill them. Proverbs 22 says, we should train our children in the way they should go so that when they are old, they will not depart from them. This is, again, if we were going to add to the list of things that aren't in the Bible, we misinterpret this passage as much as any other passage in the text. And what we interpret that to mean is I'm going to raise my kid and they're going to go off and I know they're going to sow their wild oats and I know they're going to choose to be bad. But God's promise to me is that when they get older and I'm on my deathbed, they're going to come back and go, Mom, I've repented and given my heart to Jesus. And we're going to die happy knowing that our wayward prodigal has come home. That is not what that passage says. That passage is not to the children. That passage is to the parent. And the word train has a different meaning than what we think it is. That word train means to consistently get them started on the right path. Devote yourself to getting them started on the right path. And when you as a parent get them started down the right path, as they get older, they will not leave that path. You see the difference? Now, I'm going to take a laissez-faire approach in raising my kids. I'm going to let them make their own choices. I'm going to let them do their own thing because God has promised me that when they're old, they're coming back. That's not what God's promised you. What God's promised you is that if you will be diligent to do the work of training them and getting them on the right path, then when they are old, they will not vary or not stray from that path. Now, I know immediately you're going to say, well, my kids turned out to be rotten and I did all the right things. That's true. In some cases, that's the case. But that's a conversation about free will, and we'll have to have that conversation another day. Because you must remember that if you have devoted your life to get your child started on the right path, their heart is still desperately wicked above all things, and they can choose to follow the wicked, no matter what, how good of a job it is that you do. Jesus says in Matthew chapter 17, that we need to dedicate our children, or we need to dedicate our children to get them on the narrow path, because Jesus says in Matthew 17 that there's a path that's wide, and a lot of people are on it. The gate is wide, and that wide path and that wide gate leads to destruction. But if we follow the teaching of Proverbs 22 and we devote ourselves to getting our child on that narrow path, he says that's the path to be on. But that path is narrow and that path is small, and few are those who find it. The context here is interesting. Jesus is talking about the wide path and the narrow path. Proverbs is telling us that we should dedicate ourselves to training our children to get on that narrow path. But before Jesus has the conversation about the narrow path and the wide path, Jesus has the conversation about the golden rule. If you back up to the verses before the narrow path and the wide path, Jesus says, which of you, if your child asks for bread, is going to give that child a stone? Or if that child asks for a fish, will you give that child a snake? If you then, who are evil, again, the wicked heart, know how to give good things to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good things to you, if you will simply ask? So in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you. For this sums up the law and the prophets. What Jesus is saying is that one of the ways you can best impact your society, one of the ways that you can best impact the humanity that is around you, is to find yourself living on that narrow path. Because if you are on that narrow path, then you are on the path of God. And the only way to get on that narrow path is to understand, to have your sin and rebellion rooted out in your life to the point where you come to a place where you realize, hey, I am a sinner and I need something to save me from my sin. That something is a person. That person's name is Jesus Christ. And that's where you as parents get to introduce the concept of Jesus' saving grace to your children. And when you introduce them to the concept of Jesus saves you from your wicked humanity, then you have an ally in Christ to help root that out, but also you have guided them to a place of salvation. You see how this is important? Jesus says you can't live the golden rule if there's no discipline in the home. Let me just kind of boil everything down to that statement. You can't do unto others as you would have them do to you if discipline's not a part of the process, if you're just left to your own devices. There's a third great reality here, and that is you have to understand that godly parental discipline equals love. Godly parental discipline equals love. Now, you may have been disciplined in some of the ways that I was growing up, and there was very little love there. Look, it's safe to say that I was a handful as a child, right? And my dad was gone a lot of the time, and my mom was basically a single mom trying to raise me while dad was out earning a living. And a handful is kind of an understatement. And about the sixth grade, my mother just got exasperated with what to do. And so sometime in my sixth grade year, my mother decided that she was just going to carry my dad's belt around her neck. And so she got up in the morning, she got dressed, she was putting on her earrings and her necklace and her watch, she grabbed a belt. It was just like a fashion accessory, right? Because she knew there were going to be beatings. I had exasperated her to the point. And so I was probably over-rotted, so to speak. I was probably over-disciplined. And we have had this conversation 1,000 times. It's funny how grandparents just totally lose their minds when the grandchildren come along, right? The first time I spanked Seth or Tabitha in the presence of my mother, you'd thought I had committed a capital offense. Why in the world would you spank that child? Because that child needed a spanking. And then I said, you spanked me. And she's like, yeah, and you see how much good that did. But it led way to conversations of, I probably didn't discipline you well as a child growing up. And then we kind of laughed and like, we've kind of turned out okay. My sister and I both have. We ain't great in every aspect, and we're not certainly not wonderful. We're not Debbie. But, we're productive citizens of society and those kinds of things. But it was not always done in love. Proverbs 3 tells us that the Lord corrects those he loves, just like a father would correct a child in whom he delights. Look, we're going to assume for a minute that you delight in your children, right? Not always. Sometimes you really wish they'd have been born to somebody else. I get that, right? But we'll assume for a moment that you delight in your children. You want what's good for them. Sometimes discipline is good for them. The problem is not in the fact that they need discipline. The problem is that we don't discipline in a loving way. We don't discipline in a way that says grace. We discipline because we are going to impose our will. I am going to win and you are going to lose. I am the grown-up, you are the child. How many times have we as fathers said that? You are going to do what I say. I am going to break you. It's not about breaking them, it's about outsmarting them. And if we become savvy in the concept of grace, we can do that. We'll talk about that here in just a second. But it's also not to make you as a parent feel better. I have had it with you, and so by beating you, I am going to feel better. Probably not the greatest approach, right? It's not to satisfy our anger. And particularly when Seth was little, I had not learned this yet. But I spent a lot of time being way harder on him and spanking him probably more than I should have, simply because I was angry and I didn't have a better tool to use to get the job done. And as he's grown up, he and I have had those conversations. And I've had to apologize for just being uninformed and uneducated and dumb, and not understanding that grace is more important than anger. Discipline them because you love them and because you want what's God's best for them. Now, this is where you're going to get mad at me. One of the places you're going to get mad at me. You can't guide them in the ways of God if you are a hypocrite. I'm not talking about if you're perfect or not. But if the things of God are not important to you, you can't expect the things of God to be important to them. If you are not committed to a consistent attendance in church, don't expect your kids to be committed to a consistent attendance in church when they go off to college. If you are not committed to a regular prayer time, don't expect your children to be committed to a regular prayer time. If you are not committed to a regular Bible reading and infusing yourself with the Bible, don't expect your children, no matter how much you tell them, no matter how many times you bring them someplace and ask them to do those things that those Jesus people do, if you are not setting the example in the home, your children are not going to follow whatever example you tell them to follow. They're going to follow the example that you set. Oh, I feel the tension rising now. We discipline them because we love them. Let me go back to the Proverbs passage. Proverbs 13. The parent who spares the rod hates their child. So the Bible clearly instructs us that we should use the rod. Now, in my household, we used this. This was the rod from the Riser household. Dr. Pinson used to be director of the Baptist General Convention of Texas. And his wife didn't use a wooden spoon. That's a true story. And Debbie and I just died laughing when they told us about this. And then they showed it to us. They used a boat oar. They used a boat oar. Now, for like Dr. Pinson and Miss Bobby's 50th wedding anniversary, those kids kept that boat oar and they preserved it. They had it framed and put in a big, big frame. And they gave that to their mom and dad as a 50th anniversary wedding present. As a sign of their devotion and appreciation to the fact that they took Proverbs seriously. They used the rod. Why does the Bible say this? Why does the Bible specifically say, use the rod? Well, it's the Hebrew word, sabat, and it literally means a stick, right? It's the same word that David uses in the 23rd Psalm when he's talking about the Lord being his shepherd, and he says, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. The shepherd had two implements to help him shepherd. The first was the shepherd's crook. You've seen it. It's tall, looks like a great big candy cane. It's usually bigger than the shepherd, got a hook at the top. And it's what he used to pull sheep and to cull sheep and to put sheep in the proper mating paddocks and things like that. It's how he drug sheep around. He'd just hook it around their neck and had his, you know, drug them wherever he wanted them to go. The other one that he had was a rod. It was a stick of varying lengths, probably just something he picked up and honed down and made usable. But what he would do is if the sheep were out of line or if they were being unruly or if they weren't doing what they were supposed to do, he'd take that and he'd just whack them right here on the fleshy lamb chop, right? And that sheep would go and do what that sheep was supposed to go and do. Over time, the sheep came to fear the rod, not the shepherd. And so if a sheep was way over there and he was wandering far from the fold, that shepherd would throw that staff, that rod, at that sheep. And because the sheep was afraid of the rod, the sheep would come back to where the shepherd wanted him to be. And so the Bible's very specific about using the rod. Let me tell you one of the greatest grace things you can do in disciplining your children, and that is use the rod, not the hand. Number one, it's biblical. Number two, the hands are for fixing boo-boos. The hands are for caressing. The hands are for rubbing the back of the sick at night. The hands are for applying the salve. The hands are for applauding in celebration. The hands are for holding the face and giving butterfly kisses. The hands are attached to the intimacy factor. And to correct the child with the hand, to hit the child with the hand, causes the child to be afraid of the hands that were given to simply love. So use the rod. The Bible gives you permission to use the rod. Use it appropriately. Use it with God's grace. But save the hands for loving. Save the hands for loving. Kind of an aside to that, when you discipline, make sure you discipline in a house-neutral place. Let me give you an example. One of the mistakes we made growing up was our bedroom was kind of always the place where the rod was used, right? And so we would go to our bedroom. And so if they knew they were going to our bedroom, then they knew that there was going to be some rod action happening there. What we discovered in the early teen years is that they didn't particularly want to come talk to us in our bedroom because the bedroom was a place of punishment. It wasn't a place of intimate conversation. We'd have been much better served had we had a place in the kitchen or someplace else that was kind of the timeout corner and the spanking corner, right? Also, don't use their room as you're punished, go to your room, right? That's a punishment for me. What that says is, right now I'm ticked off at you, get out of my sight, right? Their room needs the place that they know is theirs, that they know is safe, that they know is filled with good memories and happy times, and that's where their toys are, and that's a place where they can play. So use the rod, not the hand, and discipline them in a place that is kind of neutral, so that they don't have bad feelings about being in their room, and so that your room doesn't become a place that they are afraid of. In times of intimate conversation. As they've grown older, some of the best, most intimate conversations we've ever had have happened on the king-size bed in our bedroom. And a big part of that was we eventually figured out that the bedroom wasn't the right place to punish them. Find a neutral place to do that. Use the rod. Do it in a neutral place. Another way to bring grace into the process is to delay discipline when anger is involved. Delay discipline when anger is involved. Some of the worst mistakes I made as a parent was going to the rod when I was most angry. Again, over time, Debbie and I talked about this, and through counseling friends and actual being in counseling, we came to understand that, look, discipline's great, and being angry is okay. But Jesus says, be angry and don't sin. I believe that when you are angry and you lash out at a child in your anger, I believe you've crossed the boundary there. I believe you've crossed over into the category of sin. Back up. Take some deep breaths. In a lot of cases, just call a timeout. Okay, look, we're done talking about this today. We know that mistakes have been made, correction has to happen. We're going to choose right here and right now to talk about this at an appointed time tomorrow when everybody's had a chance to chill out. And so just relax, delay discipline. That Proverbs passage, Proverbs 13, the NIV says, the parent who spares the rod hates their child, but the parent who loves their child or their children are careful to discipline them. That word careful to me carries a lot of weight. I think that word careful means know when to use the rod, know when to use timeout, know when to use teaching. I think the word careful there means if you are angry, be smart enough in advance to not do something rash or do something stupid. Be careful in the processes that you use. All of a sudden, disciplining children becomes a whole lot more thoughtful, doesn't it? It becomes a whole lot more time-consuming. And as parents, if you got little ones, the last thing you need is anything else that sucks your time away. But to keep children on the narrow path or to get them started on the narrow path requires this kind of forethought. It requires this kind of discipline. It requires this kind of preparation. Another way we can bring grace into the discipline process, another way we can bring grace into the process of the rod is communicate before and after discipline. Communicate before discipline and after discipline. One of the great lessons I learned was from a guy named Dr. Gary Chapman. Dr. Gary Chapman talked about the rebellious three-year-old. And he says, the rebellious three-year-old spilled his milk. Well, it appeared to be an accident. And he said, never punish a child for an accident. If they spilled their milk, they spilled their milk. No sense crying over that, right? Now, if they spill their milk and you pick it up and you fix them another milk and they go, poof, you talk to them. Hey, I need you to be careful with your milk. If they, in defiance, look at you and go, poof, we talked about you not doing that. If it happens again, I'm going to give you a spanking. Stop throwing your milk on the floor. All right, that's it. Here we go. Find the neutral place, give them a SWAT, right? Now, you have communicated before the SWAT happens, right? Now, after the SWAT happens, you communicate again. Do you know why you got a spanking? Yes, Daddy. You spanked me because I spilled my milk. No. Daddy spanked you because after we talked about you not throwing your milk on the floor, you continued to disobey me by throwing your milk on the floor. You did not get spanked because you spilt your milk. You got spanked because you defied my instruction. Are you going to spill your? Are you going to throw your milk on the floor anymore? No, Daddy. Okay. Spilling your milk and throwing your milk on the floor are vastly different things, right? You did not spank for spilling the milk. You spanked for rebelling against what I've already communicated to you not to do. See the difference there? Communicate before discipline and after discipline. Always, 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 always conclude any act of the rod with a loving hug from the hands. Always. They may not want it, but you find a time later when they come back to you and you re-engage, you need to know Daddy loves you. Communicate before, communicate after. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. One of the greatest grace gifts you can give in disciplining a child is let your yes be yes and your no be no. Grocery stores are great about this. You go to the grocery store, you're getting ready to check out, and right at four-year-old eye level is every good and decadent thing under the sun for a four-year-old, right? H-E-B is not dumb. They know that that four-year-old is going to flip that switch. Please, please, can I have this? Mama, please, you said when we came to start. And they will lie to you. You promised I could have this. No, you didn't. They're just trying to make you feel dumb. Talk to them before you go. Daddy's not buying you anything. We're going shopping for this week's groceries, and that's what I'm buying you. I'm not buying you any candy. I'm not buying you any snacks. I'm not buying you anything at the checkout. Do we understand each other? Yes, Daddy. That's fine until you get there. You pull up and the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup king size on sale, four for a dollar. Of course, they got them all displayed. They got this flashing neon sign. They got finger arrows pointing, you know, doing everything they can to get your kid's attention. And the kid starts. Debbie was a master at this, right? The kids would be going off about, I want this, I want that, I want this. Remember the blocks? That same block rebellion that she had as a kid has now turned into parent rebellion. And I can hear this echoing through the rafters of my home today. Are you enjoying your fit? I'm glad you are, but Mama said no. And you can fit all you want, but I am not changing my mind. And when Mama says I'm not changing my mind, the block story confirms Mama is not changing her mind. And so the kid can fit if the kid wants to fit. And Mama goes on and does her thing, and you know, guess what? Eventually the kid don't fit anymore because the kid knows Mama not changing her mind. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. I've told you this story before. I can't tell you how many mornings I've been up till 2 o'clock in the morning because I made the kids a stupid promise, and then the day didn't go as I'd planned, and then, you know, we get home, and everybody's tired and worn out. I said, I'm going to go get the movie, Daddy. It's 12:30 at night. Daddy, you promised that when we got home. You're right. I promised. Grab the blankets. Let's go. We're wasting time. We popped the video in. I made a promise. I said a yes. If I said a yes, I have to keep it, right? Those kind of consistent things do our children wonders. It also teaches them that they need to keep their word. It also gives them the opportunity to own their behavior. You're right. Daddy made a promise. I said yes. I'm going to keep my promise. Be careful about the promises you make, because you may wind up losing lots of sleep over there. The other thing that the scripture very encouraging for us to do is praise more than you punish. Praise more than you punish. Find the good, find the positive, find the attaboys, find the yahoos, find the woo woo woo. I have had to work on this throughout my children's academic career. When I came home with a B on my report card, my parents were ecstatic. They called Grandma. Kevin got a B. Really? What'd he get a B in? P.E. They were just thrilled that I brought home a B. Well, because I was a C-D student, you could still graduate with D's back in my day. Because I was a C-D student, I wanted better for my children. And so when they'd bring home their report card, my expectation was all A's, because my kids are way smarter, have been since the fifth grade, than I am. And so I expect all A's. And they'd bring home five A's and a B. I'm like, why'd you get a B? And they're like, but Dad, there's five A's. I'm like, yeah, but a B. I can't please you, right? After several years of exasperating them, Debbie and I had to have a come to Jesus meeting about this. Look, just because a bee was earth-shattering news in your family doesn't mean it has to be earth-ending news in theirs. There is nothing wrong with a bee. Encourage them, love them, motivate them, prop them up, and shut up that they don't have a 4.0. They're never going to amount to anything. You did with C's and D's. Leave them alone. Took me a while. I had to be disciplined in understanding the concept. Praise more than you punish. Colossians chapter 3, verse 21 says, parents, don't come down too hard on your children, or you will crush their spirits. It's quite a balancing act to use the rod in the home and to keep the children on the right path. We as parents and grandparents need to every single day be praying about God's grace influencing our decisions in discipline and in love for our parent or for our children. Unfortunately, we live in a community where there are large numbers of children that don't have parents that even care. And so while we want to make sure that we have appropriate things going on in our family, we also need to understand that we can be salt and light around our community.
Thank you for joining us. If you'd like to speak with someone about how you can apply this week's message to your life, please call the church office at 281-922-5520. You can find more information about East Haven by visiting easthavenchurch.org. Remember as you go to live as God's people, telling God's story, building God's kingdom.